You can't start the car. Johnny has the keys.
Rule number one, don't open the door.
Wow, how did they film that? What is going on?
I think that was one of the best scenes I've seen in a lot of movies.
When you're watching them, you're like, what am I watching?
I don't even want to talk about it.
Oh, no, you love me. You know you love me.
This is like art, dude. This is like right in your face incredible.
I can't stop watching it. What the hell is going on?
What the hell is going on?
I mean, I fell in love with it from the opening credits.
It just kind of blew my mind how brilliant it was.
We just know. We can tell. We've watched so many VHS movies.
Yeah, we are sad, sad people.
Hello and welcome out there in podcast and YouTube land. You have reached Johnny Has the Keys, a weekly podcast where we talk about horror, science fiction, key movies that have key influences on them and things that they in turn influence after that. We've been doing it for a few seasons now. This is our penultimate episode. We're the next to last episode of our sixth season. And we're excited to finish out the year and start on next season. If you're new to us, we would love to find out how you heard about us and who told you or where you found us or whatever. Leave a comment down below and let us know. Also, if you subscribe and like and do all that, that helps us tremendously, as I'm sure you are a podcast listener or a YouTube watcher know. So please do that for us. My name is David, here with my good friend Tim. Tim, we've got wonderful, blustery, snowy backgrounds, and it's going to be a good day here. But what have you been doing this week?
It's snow, and it's almost summer.
It's almost summer, and we're doing a snowy episode.
We're doing a snowy episode. I'm doing well. We usually start this thing off with like a, what have we done in our genre week? And a while back, we did a top five from 2013, and this one I ended up watching and was quite impressed with for a small, low-budget movie. It's called Jugface.
Where do you find? I don't understand where you find me.
Jugface has been on my list for a while because it got really high rankings on Rotten Tomatoes, from what I remember.
Okay.
No, not really high. But anyway, up enough that I would watch it. It's a backwoods hillbilly horror film that you may know people involved with it because it was filmed in Nashville.
Backwoods hillbilly horror.
That's a subgenre
you don't hear a lot.
That's my description, by the way. I did not lift that. It's written, directed by somebody I didn't really know. His name is Chad Crawford Kinkle. It's, like I said, low-budget folk horror film. Folk horror would be the best term, really, for this if you're looking for a horror tag. The cast is great, though. I was really impressed with this cast, and I'm sure they're all locals. It stars Sean Bridgers, Lauren Ashley Carter, Larry Fessenden, who is not a local. I've seen him in a lot of stuff. He was in House of the Devil. He was the guy in the cemetery that... remember, popped in on her when she was in her car. I don't know if you remember that or not. Anyway, Larry Fessenden, you would recognize him. And surprise, surprise, Sean Young is in this movie. So we know her, of course, from Blade Runner. She's one of those actresses that had a bad reputation for a while, but she's in this and she's good. The synopsis is a pregnant with her brother's child, a young girl tries to escape from her backwoods community after learning that she is to be sacrificed to a creature that lives in a very deep pit. So you see where I'm going with this. I mean, it's got the makings of a great horror movie to me anyway. It's bizarre, it's creepy, and it's effective. And I've added it to our list of films to cover because I think it would be an interesting one to cover. So
interesting.
It got 76 on Rotten Tomatoes. I would probably give it an 80. I enjoyed it.
Okay.
So that's what I did for my genre week.
My genre week, I took the advice of people and some of our fans that have told me to and everything else and finally watched Apple TV series called Severance.
The whole thing? How many seasons is that?
It's only one season.
Oh, okay. I thought it had been on a while.
And it's only 9 episodes. They were starting into season 2 when COVID hit, and they've been delayed that long. So everybody's excited because the announcement is out that supposedly this summer it's coming back for season two.
Is it sci-fi?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought it was a drama.
Do not get Severance compared to the family drama mafioso sort of thing that's winning all the Emmys and everything.
Succession.
And it's Succession.
Okay.
Totally different. And I was getting them mixed up a lot,
I'm mixing them up, too. That's exactly why I thought there was more than one season.
But everybody has said, oh, if you like Westworld, you'll like Severance. Oh, if you like For All Mankind, you'll like Severance, blah, blah, blah. So I said, all right, well, then obviously all these people that I know are recommending it, I got to do it. And no, I don't like Severance. I'm sorry, I don't. It's much more in line with a J.J. Abrams, like a Lost. And it's much more in line with, what was the one that, I haven't even finished that series because I got to like halfway through season two and couldn't finish it.
Called Strange New Worlds. That's me.
No, that's you. No, the weird, bizarre one, Legend, sorry, I should have done better research on that, but it's the one that I think was an AMC series and very bizarre, very strange.
Legion?
Very outlandish. Legion, that's it, yes.
Okay.
And I liked season one of Legion.
I liked season one. I couldn't get past season two.
I struggled with Severance, especially near the middle. It is very slow. Let me phrase it this way. I think you should watch it. I would recommend especially you watch it. It's created by Dan Erickson. He's only really got one other credit called Chambers to his deal, but it stars Adam Scott. Adam Scott's a comedian from like Parks and Rec. I've never watched Parks and Rec, but that's what his credit is. Zach Cherry, Britt Lower is in it too. She's really, really strong. But the big guy you would recognize in it is Christopher Walken. And John Turturro are both in it as regular. Patricia Arquette is a regular. So they've got great casting. It's got very unique story. The setup is really good. Okay, just as a simple little premise, this is taking work-life balance to the science fiction extreme. This guy works for a company where every day when he goes in at 8 in the morning or 8:05, all of the employees are staggered so they don't meet each other. But when he goes in and changes clothes into his work clothes and goes down an elevator, a chip that they've implanted in his brain changes his personality and he forgets everything in his real life and just focuses on his work life. So you can just work and you can make associations at work and coworkers and do your job and all that kind of stuff.
Total recall.
And when you go back up in the elevator, you remember everything, but you don't remember anything from down below where you worked. So they're called innies and outies. The outie is the person that wants to join this company. The innie is the person who works for the company. And it's all about the complications that can thus ensue when your work and your life are totally separated from each other. It has some interesting setups. It has some okay ideas. The last episode is excellent. And to me, it's like, okay, so you built up 9 episodes of nothing to get to this final episode, which is really cool and interesting and ends on a cliffhanger, and we have to wait 3 years for season two. I don't know if maybe they just staggered it because they wanted to extend the story and make it multiple seasons long, but there are like 3 episodes in the middle where you're just going, okay, you're just being weird.
You're not selling
for weird's sake. And weird for just weird doesn't work.
Yeah, I sold Jugface. Kind of you're not selling this. I'd rather watch Jugface again.
Yes. Well, you had a better time than I
I'll
did.
Take Sean
I mean,
Young.
This was just weird. It was just weird, and I do not recommend it at all.
Okay. Well, so. I would not see it anyway because I don't have Apple TV. So any of those shows like Ted Lasso or whatever, Lasso.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't see them.
Well, For All Mankind. For All Mankind's great.
Yeah, but.
It's excellent, but.
I just don't see myself subscribing anytime soon.
Foundation is good. I mean, Apple TV Plus is really doing some good science fiction. This was just not a good example of that, in my opinion. And you guys out there listening and watching, let me know if you disagree with me. Because, like I said, several people have recommended this series to me. And I get the setup. Premise, cool. Last episode, cool. Rest of it, boy. Could have truncated that really quick.
Wow. There's no segues. Yeah.
Nope. There's no way to
segue. No sci-fi segues. Fear. Nothing to do with backwoods hillbilly horror, really. Maybe backwoods, but a different type of backwoods. We are today delving into what I believe is our first vampire episode of the season, and maybe the first since we covered those Dracula double features.
Yep.
I think it's been a while. We need to get some blood flowing. So let's go right into 30 Days of Night, which is a 2007 film directed by David Slade. I looked him up because I was like, I know this guy from other stuff. And I do. He's a very adequate director. He did a movie called Hard Candy that he's known for. I think that was one that gave him his push. And then, of course, he did Black Mirror Bandersnatch, which I think you're a fan of. Mm-hmm. And he did a Twilight movie, Eclipse. But he also directs a lot of strong television shows like Hannibal and Breaking Bad. So he's a very good director. However, well, we'll get to the problems with this one. But overall, I do like this movie. Quick synopsis. Basically, you're in Barrow, Alaska, a town that experiences once a year 30 days of night because of the way the Earth rotates. What ripe ground for a caravan of vampires to come in and basically slaughter the entire town. Premise is great. It's based on a comic book that was originally supposed to be a movie and got rejected, became a comic book, and then the comic book was successful, and it got picked up for a film. It stars Josh Harnett, Melissa George, and Danny Houston, who are, well, Josh and Danny are really good in this, I think. I'm not so sure about Melissa. But basically, to sum up the thing is the vampires come in and nearly wipe out the town until a handful of people manage to survive. I'm sure this is not the first time you've seen this movie.
No, second time.
Okay.
I saw it originally.
It was the third time.
Not in a theater, but saw it. Yeah.
And I have always remembered that I love this movie. I think it is great, except for the ending, which totally pisses me off every time I watch it. And it's not even really the ending. It's the fact that it seems like all of this movie transpires in a night when it actually transpires in 30 nights. And that makes no sense to me at all.
Well, I remember being conflicted about this movie the first time I saw it, mostly because of, like you said, the ending. I remember the ending, the final plot twist sort of thing that Hartnett's character does. I went, what?
Yeah.
Really? Even then? And then the fact that he can retain his humanity even up to dying, killing himself with her. Yeah. Just didn't work at
Yeah,
all.
I don't know which I have more of a problem with. That or the fact that this looks like it's all taking place in one day when actually it's been 30 days.
Well, yeah. One of my first notes is why isn't this called One Day of Night?
Right.
Because it's just without any days to be passing or costume changes or anything.
Sleep. They never show anybody sleeping.
Well, they show him sleeping, really? Remember, because he goes to sleep and she's standing guard. She falls asleep, and the old guy sneaks out and creates that whole bullshit with him and his son and running around the streets going, "Dad, Dad." Yeah, that's not going to call his attention at all. You're hiding from these, you know.
But I mean, that still seems like it was the same night, though, even though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it doesn't seem like any time transpires. The only thing I noticed this time is that Josh's beard gets a little bit longer, just a little bit, not like a full beard that would be 30 days.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, too. They should have fixed that.
Yeah.
I mean, I would even give him an enemy mind beard. I don't care, but do something to show that time is passing. And I know it's difficult when you don't have the days and you have to suddenly halfway through the movie come up with a little, you know, a little Chiron or bug in the corner that says day 7.
But do it.
Really? It doesn't look like it's any different, but I would have liked more of that.
If they would have done that, I would forgive them. I really would. If they would have done that to show time passing.
And okay, here's a good kind of, we should have used this as maybe a segue, because my feeling on this movie is it was a great idea that isn't done well. It makes a really cool idea of, you know, and the work-life balance of Severance is a cool idea of turning your brain off. Like you said, very Total Recall kind of thing. You don't know what is real and what's not because you're two different people divided into one kind of thing. But this has, of course, a city that has 30 days of darkness, would that not attract vampires? Hell yes. That's a great idea. Yeah. Do we want to do something different and go away from the romantic sort of vampire thing and make these feral creatures? Sure. Mm-hmm. Cool idea. Neat. Makes no sense overall. A, why are they here? Okay, fine. You answer why. What was their plan? How were they going to leave? How were they going to get away? What were they going to do?
Well, they obviously They came on that boat at the beginning, I guess. That giant ship.
I guess. I don't know.
And I guess they came from the Carpathian Mountains.
This is a weird. This is a weird teaser. So this is Renfield. Okay, this guy traipsing through here. Blah blah blah. And from the very beginning, they set up premises that don't work to me in this, like. The first time we meet Harkness' character, they're looking at a burn pit where all the cell phones in town happen to end up.
Yeah.
So this guy, stranger, snuck into town and took everybody's freaking cell phone overnight. You know, it just keeps getting more impossible. Like, my biggest note all the way through this is, looks cool, really great photography at times, neat sort of stuff, good realistic blood, but these guys waste a lot of food. I mean, these guys are supposed to be drinking blood, not splattering it all over the frickin' place. I mean, even Hammer doesn't show blood this much.
No, but I like it. I do.
It makes no sense for a vampire to be wasting food like that.
Well, I think they are, like you said, feral. I think they're just animals. But back to what you were saying about this movie not working, and it doesn't. Like I said, my biggest gripe is the time passage and the ending with Josh. But as far as filming and concept and execution of shots and action, I think this movie's gorgeous. I think it is one of the coolest looking vampire films I've ever seen.
It is cool. It's one of my keys from it is the Van Helsing movie, because it has a lot of the feralness of the vampires, and it also has this kind of day for night blue look that's kind of really cool. Mm-hmm. Although it makes me feel like, oh, there was a, you know, not only was it 30 days of night, there was a full moon the entire time. Because we can see we can see all the way down the damn street. I wish it would have been darker. I would have liked the John Carpenter approach.
I see what you mean. I can see that, but I kind of like
through doorways.
I mean, I can see both sides. I mean, it's kind of cool to see it in bright light, but it would have been cool. It would have been scarier maybe in dark light. But I mean, I thought it was pretty scary. Like, I love the subtleties of him, you know, just showing somebody pass by in the background and not explaining it. And you're like, they're there, man. They're circling you.
Yeah, that was a gimmick he overplayed, though.
He did it three times.
There's a lot of close-ups in this movie, and I think too many.
Okay.
Where we don't really get a good establishing. We're doing these intense close-ups of people so that over their shoulder, we can see that out-of-focus thing go really fast. And nice, but like overplayed a lot.
Yeah, I saw it like three times, I want to say. Once maybe on the rooftops and then once somewhere else. And I think the cast is pretty good, although I read a review that somebody wrote and they just kind of ripped Melissa apart.
She does. Well, other than Josh Hartnett's character, I can't remember his name, the sheriff.
It's
really
even.
Nobody has any character development in this movie.
The guy big equipment, whatever that big bulldozer thing is, he's probably the only other one.
Well, he has purpose, but he doesn't. We don't know other than he lives way out there, so we give him tickets every now and then so he feels like he's part of the community.
But what I'm saying is they have a scene to at least establish him. They don't have scenes to really establish that guy that's his partner with the sheriff, the other sheriff guy.
Billy.
Yeah, Billy. They don't really establish his character at all.
No. And yet he's supposed to be the big reason that he's the Deus Ex blood at the end,
right?
Kind of thing. Yeah, none of that. It just, and there's times like, oh, we see this little girl wandering down the street, and we're in like day 28 now, or whatever. And A, how did she live and survive? B, are we supposed to care about her just because she's a little girl? Because we've never seen her freaking before. So why do we care?
How do you know it's day 28?
Well, because just a little bit later, they're suddenly at the big machine.
And tomorrow's dawn. They keep saying tomorrow is dawn. I'm like, really? Has it only been one day?
Yeah. I really do like the setup. I like this totally confusing teaser of this guy with trekking across the snow, obviously leaving a lot of footprints. Duh, we find out later. But, and then suddenly things happening, like all the dogs dying, being murdered. That was pretty cool. The cell phones, although it makes no freaking sense.
It makes no sense, but yeah, the cell phones are trying to get rid of
contact. So I loved that kind of setup. But then once the attacks start, I'm going, what is their logic here? And A, I think planes fly at night. I've heard that happens. Planes can fly at night. So what the hell does it, they even mention later on, he destroyed my helicopter or somebody tore up my helicopter, blah, blah, blah. But no flights take place in this town for a month? They really? And by like week one, aren't people, because it said, they changed the sign. It goes from like 580 to 120 or something. And I was going, okay, so those other 400 people didn't worry that they couldn't call they keep calling, they're not getting anybody answering of cell phones, and they don't do anything, and they don't rescue or that, whatever. And what was the vampire's plan? How were they going to get the frick out? I don't like stupid vampires.
They shouldn't have called it 30 days at night. They should have just called it something else and had it all take place in one night.
I would have just called it Barrow.
Yeah.
I think that would have been really cool.
Yeah, I mean, and then you've got, you know what? It's going to be dark for 30 days, so you have that no hope. But it could still just take place in that very first night because those vampires come in and clean house.
Right, which is another problem I have with it. They are so feral and so attacking. And my favorite, we haven't talked about scenes, but my favorite scene in this is that aerial shot.
Yeah.
That is the best thing in this entire movie.
It looks like shot from Dawn of the Dead 2004 where you see the truck hit the fire station. And that's a good aerial shot too, even though it's Zack Snyder. Yeah.
And even though there's a bunch of blood wasted everywhere, it looks cool on the snow and against the buildings and all that. But, they ravage this town within hours and then suddenly wait and just kind of hang out to get people one at a time.
They're full.
So So it doesn't work. And they're feral and vicious and like a pack of wolves, yet Big Dog can speak gibberish and is very loving to his wife escort vampire thing girl, whatever, and even talks about he's the one that fights back and has all the... So he's not feral at all, and yet the rest of them are. And then later on, Billy can be Billy, or so-and-so can be so-and-so, and that's why he gets the idea of injecting himself, because you can be yourself for a little while. None of the climax makes any freaking sense. I just go, why are you ruining my vampire?
Well, and some of the vampires...
This doesn't happen to Tim's zombies.
Right. Some of the vampires transpired faster than others. So how would you know how fast you're going to transpire or change?
Right.
Because, like, that little girl was already, like, whacked out. But there was, like, the one guy that startles him when he looks up. And I was like, well, he's taking a lot longer to change than others. The one that he kills on the swing set.
Right. Yeah. Well, and then the other guy in the after the grocery store scene with the little girl, the other guy says he was bitten, but he couldn't tell them because he didn't want to tell them. But he's wanted to kill himself since his wife died or whatever. He goes off on this big,
the
huge
one
speech,
that looks like he could be native, maybe. He's dark skinned. Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
And Josh has to take him in the room and cut his head off. You know, and how did he realize cut the head off works? The vampires say it earlier for us, the audience, but when did they figure out, oh, cutting the head off works? You know, we needed a line like, shoot them in the head. They go up pretty quick. Burn them, whatever.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's no
Sorry, I was trying to find something. I'd put some keys down somewhere and I misplaced them. Sorry.
Okay.
I had drifted for a second. Back to what we normally do are scenes. You want to go ahead and do some scenes?
The aerial shot.
Okay.
Is my
favorite absolutely.
Scene in this.
I think any scene with Danny Houston. I think Danny Houston's fantastic in this. He's just a great actor. I like him in anything I see him in. And I don't have a problem with him being intelligent and feral. I like that they can go back and forth. I mean, because maybe the smell of blood or taste of it just makes them more bestial. Does that make sense?
And that's fine,
yeah,
too,
I'm fine
if
with that
happens. You know, that happens in several other horror, you know, vampire movies where... Don't be around me. Don't believe. You know, even in Dracula, he's totally fine until Harker cuts his finger and then he starts losing it. Mm-hmm. But we don't see that in this. We see a pack of wolves with one guy who can talk to all of them and his girlfriend.
Yeah. And he is really the only one that ever talks other than that.
Correct.
I mean, they have their own language. They kind of establish that. And it's weird, like grunts and clicking noises or whatever.
And he uses it to the humans. I even have in my notes, okay, why are you talking to them? They don't understand a freaking word you're saying.
He don't care.
So why are you translating for us this, you know, they are so protective of each other or blah, blah, whatever the BS you're saying. Mm. I just, no. I like him. I agree with you. I think from a casting standpoint, he's really good. And I like the design of these vampires.
I love
with
it.
The black eyes and the shark teeth and the really pale. I question their motivation and how they could ever freaking exist in humanity.
Right. And it's
these guys live in caves somewhere.
Agreed. And it's one of those movies that we hate the most that is a could have been, because it's a great idea. It's just not well thought out or executed. However, I do think some of the execution was really good. I loved some of the photography and some of the way like you said, that aerial shot.
Yeah, but I even did in research, because I've never read the graphic novel.
I haven't either.
But looking at research in it, the changes they made were the things that were wrong. Like the beginning of the graphic novel, for one thing, the Danny Houston character is just a character in the novel. There's actually a leader, and his name is Vicente.
Yeah, I saw
in
that.
In the comic. And They exchange emails. They live in society. They have parties. They're the typical vampires you know of this kind of gallant sort of, I've been around for 100 years or 300 years or whatever, you know. Very interview-esque sort of thing. They're not these feral, there's no way they could even live in society sort of thing. So there's no Vicente in this, and there's no humanity to the vampires. You know, I kind of put it in my notes, but I didn't word it right. The thing about zombies, we have always said, is, or the undead sort of thing, is we're more afraid of the human than we are of the zombie. The zombie is straightforward, does his thing, blah, blah, blah. But the humans are the ones that turn into animals when the apocalypse comes.
Right. They're more dangerous.
Vampires, to me, are the opposite. What we like about the vampire is trying to hold on to its humanity. That's why Angel is so freaking popular. That's why Twilight is so freaking popular, is the dichotomy of a creature that wants to be human but isn't anymore kind of thing. And that's not in this. They don't want to be human. They want to be wolves or animals of some kind. They don't want society or light or anything. They want to rip people's throats out.
And that is a very good question, is where did they exist before this? Because obviously when they go somewhere, they kind of just destroy.
Yeah.
Like conquerors.
No, there's no way that they could exist in society. You know, and I started looking at this going, especially this time watching it going, there is so much you could have done in the last part of this.
Yeah.
Like you could have had, if they can mirror humans, and they can do that, you could have one of them infiltrate the group.
And that would explain maybe the cell phones, if they had more than one doing it.
Yeah. Right. And there was one that was always here. And it could even be your big, chopper guy. I call him the chopper guy because he has that big mining machine that has some of the best deaths. Okay, if we talk about scenes, that scene I kind of liked when he's going to town killing as many of them as
chopping the vampires up with that thing, whatever. Yeah. That thing. It's the thing that she ends up running into at the very beginning. I don't know what it is. It's some kind of
piece. And he's
of
also
equipment.
Got the shotgun and blowing people away and
yeah,
all
that's
this.
Great.
And
that's
it was
a great
scene. Sequence.
Yeah.
Except then they show, and there's like, even after that, there's like 35 of them left.
How many are there? Yeah, exactly. All the principals are left. He was just killing the ones that we never saw. Yeah. But I love how they're right behind. That's another one of those shots. So, yeah, there's probably more than three. When he stops, you see them in the background. You know they're coming.
Mm-hmm.
And he runs into that building, and he's like, you're not eating me. And he throws that flare into that dynamite and just blows himself up. But he still lives.
That's the one that got me. If he had blown himself up along with like 10
and
of
he's
them,
outside
great.
So but that then, Danny Houston can crush his head.
Yeah. Makes no, and not only does he live, he lives without any injury. I mean, he's not smoking. He's not half of him burned, an arm blown off, nothing.
No. He just got kind of blown out of the building in all that fire.
I went, nope, that was a case of freaking dynamite.
Right.
Nope. Wouldn't work, you know. I mean, and I read in the novel, or in the graphic novel or the comic book, what happens is Vicente realizes that the Danny Houston character is...
His name is Marlo, by the way.
Marlo.
Which is very similar to Marlo.
Yeah. Yes. But he realizes that he's screwing everything up. He ends up killing him. And then ordering all of the vampires to burn the town so there's no evidence. You know, okay, that kind of has a plan and makes sense. We didn't see that in the movie. So.
Nah, I'm looking at my pictures. I don't guess I have any other scenes. I mean, I love the scenes where they're like scurrying on the rooftops. I guess maybe it is aerial scenes I like better.
Well, you like the vista scenes. You like the two of them standing on the rooftop looking down at all the carnage and all that. When the one Billy or the one, not Billy, but the guy that's looking for Dad is hiding behind the generator cabinet and way back behind him you on the see roof, somebody you running. See the guy yeah. climb up mm-hmm. and running and jump to the other one out of frame mm-hmm. and you go, oh, okay. The scenes where we know stuff that the characters
yeah, know, that's the best stuff.
You know, is a lot of this. And yeah, and he has some good jump scares. He has great gore and great effects, makeup effect. That beheading of Billy, that's probably the best beheading I've ever seen. Because it takes like three hits to cut his head.
Oh, that's when and Josh Harnett realistic. Does it. Yeah, because he's changed.
After he's hurt, yeah. after he cut his hand off in the ripper, graper, grabber thing, the garbage disposal thing.
It's a, well, I don't know what that thing's called, but they call the building a Commodore or something. You know what I'm talking
about? I don't know.
I looked it up. Like I was that. Like, what is this? Oh, the Utilidor. They call it the Utilidor.
The Utilidor.
And I'm like, what the fuck is a Utilidor? So I looked it up, and it is actually a building for small communities that coordinates all the pipes and the intake and outtake of like water and things like that. So that is mm-hmm. a real thing. I was like, are they making this up? I've never heard of a Utilidor. So, but there's that thing that's in it, that grinder thing, whatever that is, man.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, let's talk MacGuffins. How many MacGuffins are in this movie?
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, the first one is that thing that she hits on her way to the airport, because that's the thing he drives yep. down the street and slaughters all the vampires with. But then the first time you see that grinder thing in the Utilidor, you know that's going to come into play later.
Oh, yeah.
So,
and that's when we hear about the helicopter, because that's what they did. He found pieces of the helicopter in there. Somebody. Right. So Renfield not only stole every cell phone in town.
He also
lifted a helicopter. Took apart a helicopter and brought it. Yet he can't fight the sheriff or break his cuffs or do anything. There's stuff. But yeah, there's the other MacGuffin, like you said, they make a point of the power is out. They have destroyed the generator because they leave the guy's head on a stick out front of
because
it.
Because they don't want anyone changing. I like that.
Right. Yeah. He goes, don't turn anyone. Yeah. But they leave the, even though two of the vampires do, obviously.
Yeah, anyway, they're very sloppy.
They leave the guy's head out there because there's no power. Yet when we get to Billy's house, even though he's signaling with a flashlight, his apartment is lit up like a Christmas tree everywhere.
Maybe he's got his own generator.
Why wouldn't they kill it? They killed the other generator that, you know, other, oh, yeah, and another great plant. Grandma grows weed with her UV lights. UV lights. Let's go use those. We use them for one freaking flash, and then they kill the generator.
I think they should have used. Yeah, I plan. Think the UV lights should have come into play with a big finale. I think they could yes, have utilized that.
He should
that.
Have taken those with him, going to get them. Mm-hmm. I have to sneak over there and steal them and get them. That's the suspense. And we lose somebody on the way, maybe. Right. Okay, cool. But that's setting up for the end. I would have done that. But also, they kill that generator, but they don't kill the Utilidor's generator because the big crunchy machine is working and everything is brightly lit.
That's true.
What? And also, if it's not, wouldn't the vampires then go there? Because that's where they know they will. It's the only place that still has power. I'm sorry. I'm going off.
No, I'm glad you are, because I just realized there's a whole new theme for what something we did that late in this season, but I'll get to that toward the end.
Okay. All right.
Because usually we go out with a bang, and we've had two that are just could have been's in a row, and we don't usually have that near the end of the season. And we're basically completely rewriting these films as we talk about them. and we did both of them. We did this last week with War of the Worlds. So it's like
– true.
You have to save us, though. There is one movie left this season, David. It is your choice. It better be good.
Oh, it is good. It's great.
Anyway, I was going to save that, but I go ahead and do it. And I can move on to cast since we've kind of dwelled a little bit. And I don't have a lot on cast. Let me just very quickly make sure I don't have any other background. One of the backgrounds I do have is that this was a Sam Raimi pet project. Did you know that?
I saw that in the credits.
Yeah, he really wanted to do it, and he probably would have done it better. But he was tied up and decided he would produce it instead, and that's how David Slade got the gig. I wish that Raimi would have had some script approval, though. I think he would have probably made it more logical. The writer is Steve Niles. He did the comic and the screenplay, so you can blame the comic guy. The other writer is Stuart Beatty. He did Curse of the Black Pearl, which is the good Pirates of the Caribbean movie. And Brian Nelson, who did Hard Candy, which is one of Slade's earliest collaborators. And then Ben Temple Smith also wrote it, but he was just on the comic. He didn't have anything to do with the movie. Yeah, I've got that Steve Niles is one of the writers responsible for bringing horror comics back to prominence. So that's kind of cool because, you know, EC Comics died a long time ago and horror comics kind of went away. So with 30 Days a Night and this Steve Niles character, he brought horror comics back. So that is at least one good thing. The first thing I have in my casting notes is lots of these folks are in Peter Jackson movies because this was filmed in New Zealand.
Oh, I didn't know
that. Honestly. This cast is full of what I hope this is not derogatory. I call them Kiwis. Isn't that what they're called?
Kiwis.
Yeah. I've noted it in here because I was like, so many of them, I don't know what they've done. And if I do, it's a Peter Jackson movie. Josh Harnett is not. I know him from Halloween H2O. That's the first thing he ever did and the first thing I ever saw him in was in 1998. It was the return of Jamie Lee Curtis, the first time to the Halloween movies. He has since done fairly well. He was in The Faculty, then moved on to stuff like Black Hawk Down, and he's in Oppenheimer, the one that is up for all the Oscars.
And one you didn't mention that he's brilliant in is Penny Dreadful.
Oh, okay. That's right. I did. I watched that too. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
So I like Josh Harnett, and I think he's fine in this. I just think, like you said, it's got script problems.
He's fine. Yeah, he's fine, and he actually has a lot of layers in this one. The whole thing with the
brother and the grandmother.
Losing her, and then the losing the brother, and all
that. Well, he didn't lose the brother, but he lost the grandmother.
Yeah.
And I wish they would have shown that. It was very similar. Oh, God, I just got another key. I'll talk about it in a second. Hang on.
Okay.
I'm going to.
You take that key. Keys are
if
good.
I don't write it down. And I can't believe I lost the ones that I had. Anyway, back to casting. So we like Josh Harnett. Melissa George is an Australian actress. She plays Stella. She got kind of ripped apart in one of the reviews I saw. And I don't think she's that horrible. You know, she did what she could with the script, I guess. But I saw her in a movie a couple of years back that I think I may have put on our list called Triangle, that is this really wild, like, time trip mindfuck on a boat in the ocean. Have you heard or seen of this?
No.
Okay. Anyway, I liked it. It was a movie called Triangle. And then she was also in Dark City, which I think is a movie you like.
Mm-hmm. She was in Grey's Anatomy. But her big thing I remember from is Alias. She was in Alias for like 3 years.
Okay, the Jennifer Garner
she was in a lot.
Thing. Okay. Yeah. But I didn't really know her.
And she's adequate in this, but her character doesn't have a lot of resolution or anything. So there's no real reason for, I mean, we never find, obviously they're estranged, but we never find out why. We never find, so we don't know why this whole ending of what did you do? Oh, let's just come and sit and watch the sunrise together works. I mean, there's obviously chemistry between them. So what's the backstory?
Yeah. I mean, we know that there was there's a breakup, but all of a sudden he's a hero and she's in love with him again. I don't know.
Right. And she's obviously a competent fire person with a gun. That's the first time we really, you know, get to see her in action is with the Renfield character. And yet she doesn't do anything else with it. She's a firefighter, so it seems like she would have some other skills.
She's a fire marshal, but yeah, I guess that, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's all I have on her. Danny Houston is the one I have listed next. He's acting royalty. Yep. He's Angelica Houston's half brother, so he's from the John Houston and John Houston's father. I can't remember who he is, but John Houston's father was in the business too. I mean, they go way back. He's in everything. I mean, if you look at his list of credits, I've seen him in so many things, including The Aviator, Children of Men. We mentioned Succession earlier. He's in that. The only thing about him that I did not know was that at one time he was married to Virginia Madsen. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know
that. That blew my mind. I was like, wow, he was married to the woman from the original Candyman. I love Virginia Madsen. She guest starred on Moonlighting the last season. I really liked her. Back to other really great characters that are great actors that I forgot to mention. Ben Foster plays the stranger, and he probably is one of the biggest scenery chewers in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
He is what you described as the Renfield character, the one that comes to town to scout things out before the vampires arrive. He is like, he's very much like that weird homeless man in Hellraiser with the bad teeth and the scraggly hair. He's really good at it. I mean, he's very menacing, I think, when like they're looking at him and he's just like, you're not going to live. You're all going to die. I don't have any other notes on him as far as other things, but he's married to someone famous too. He's married to Laura Prepon from Orange is the New Black.
Oh.
Yeah. And okay. 70s show or whatever. Yeah.
Yep, but that 70s show.
Like him. And then the big guy that gets citations at the beginning of the film and ends up driving the equipment, slaughtering all the vampires. His name is Mark Boone Jr. He played Bo Brower. He is friends, obviously, with who's the guy that did Oppenheimer?
Nolan.
Christopher Nolan, because he's in Memento and Batman Begins, but he is frequently cast in the films of his good friend, Steve Buscemi. This thing's full of Nepo babies.
Yeah.
Anyway, I liked him. I thought he was good, too. He was David Slade's top choice. Oh, no, he was not David Slade's top choice, though, for this. This is one that could have been potentially cast with somebody else. You want to take a guess?
No.
Forrest Whitaker. That would have been interesting.
Really?
Yeah, I like Forrest Whitaker a lot.
As Bo Brower?
Yeah.
Because I remember this. I remember Junior guy, Mark Junior from Sons of Anarchy. He's like in every freaking episode of that series.
Oh.
I haven't seen every episode, but that was his.
Oh, well, he looks like a biker, so that makes sense. Yeah. Okay. Mark Rendell is a Canadian that played Jake Olsen. I think he's the
brother.
Okay. He is the brother. And you know what he's known for? Because he's actually very famous.
No, I don't know.
He is known
Rendell
over the world as a voice actor for voicing Arthur the Aardvark.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay.
So I didn't know it's kind of funny. And then the rest I have are all Kiwis. And I mean, I'm not even going to list them. A lot of them are the vampires and have no lines. A lot of them are just characters that get killed. But I've got Kiwi, Kiwi Hobbit movies, Kiwi, Kiwi, Kiwi Frighteners, Narnia, Kiwi, Kiwi, Lord of the Rings, Kiwi Matrix, Kiwi King Kong. So all of these people, like I said, are New Zealand actors that are in movies that are mainly made in New Zealand. They flew in a few Americans and Brits and Australians to play the principals and then cast all the lesser characters with people of that country. This movie did not win any awards that I can tell. The Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror nominated it for Best Horror Film and Makeup, but Sweeney Todd won. You want to know what else it beat? 1408, Grindhouse, and The Mist.
Sweeney Todd won makeup over them?
Sweeney Todd won best horror film over this film, 1408, Grindhouse, and The Mist. Oh, and Dawn of the Dead.
I would say The Mist is the only contender out of
Well, you haven't seen Grindhouse.
No. But But I mean, of the ones,
1408 is a great story. I don't remember the movie. Anyway, it's not on the 1001 movies you must see before you die, for obvious reasons. So,
goodness gracious.
Did you have any other little bits that you wanted to go over before we move on to keys? Because this movie does have a lot of keys, even though it's got some problems.
I have, just in my notes, I have one of the best Renfield lines is, "That cold ain't the weather, that's death approaching."
I love when he says teeth. That you can feel it. He said, "You can feel it, can't you?"
I said, "Okay, here's the problem with this movie." Almost everybody in it thinks they're in a horror movie and they're acting like that. And it's true, in my opinion. Everybody in it from the very beginning thinks they're in a horror movie. And it shows. Even Hartnett does that.
Well, he's playing detective the whole time because he knows something's up, for sure. Yeah. From the very first scene.
Okay, we were talking about scenes, and I miss scenes. One of the better scenes I'll give them is the grocery store scene. It's got a good scare in it. It's got a good kill in it. It's a really fairly strong
scene. That's the one with the little girl, right?
Yeah. How the hell did this guy live after the dynamite? Oh, my favorite line from the movie. "It took centuries to make them believe that we were only bad dreams." And it's not profound enough because you have to read it in a subtitle because it's Houston's character, Marlowe, saying
speaking in his language.
You know.
I watched the whole movie in subtitles, so I didn't. I was used to it. I have that the sound of the vampires were created through a mix of screams of the actors with recordings of local death metal singers and various marsupials.
That's some cool production. Yeah.
The signature roar of the vampires were actors screaming while inhaling. Well, that's easy.
Yeah.
Yep. And then, like you said, they speak their own language. It was created for the film with the helps of a linguistic professor at New Zealand University.
I've got fake MacGuffin. So the Hartnett character has asthma. We make a big deal about that, yet we don't use it anywhere and don't do anything with it. What's the point? And obviously he has the same blood type as Billy, since he injects himself with Billy's blood. And after the big finale, the vampires just go away. They just disappear.
I know. That's so we have really what happens. I mean, basically, he challenges the leader, punches his face through, which to me was totally stupid. And then they have respect for him, and now he's the new leader, but he's going to die, so where do they go?
Yeah, they just leave. So that's my last notes are, so is he the leader or not? So they all just go away? What was the plan to begin with? How are they going to ever get away from this town?
Because the sun rose, and they're still there.
And they're still there. And that's the other thing, too, is like day 28 or whatever, the survivors should have realized, oh, we found out their plan of how they're going to get away with this, I don't know, repaired spaceship that they built underneath the ice.
You are on the same wavelength as I am. We need to rewrite this movie, and they need to be in the ice and thawed out. Just like the thing. They're like vampires like from the Viking age. And that's why they're like brutal and shit.
Right. And they came there originally because it was 30 days of nights. And that was their feast period every year. And then they re-hibernated.
And then somebody burning a bunch of cell phones melted the ice block there.
There
someone left the heater on, Scooby.
All for you wet, pesky kids. And then I've got my last two are, well, that's a really protracted ending, and I'm not sure kissing is a smart idea at this particular juncture since he's burning.
That, okay. I thought you meant when he was a vampire that he might bite her. But,
well, that too. Yeah. But, you know, he's not even an angel type vampire and having to fight it. He's so good. That It doesn't even affect
pure
him.
Of
he never
heart.
Ferals out.
He is pure of heart. Yeah. They should have established that early on, too, like having him like go
Josh
or do a rosary or something.
Josh, pure of heartnet. Yes. Okay, cool.
Pure of heartnet. Oh, oh, that one hurt.
Okay.
All right, keys. I've got the comic book, which was originally supposed to be a movie, became a comic book, then became a movie.
And to tag onto that, there was a sequel to this movie with the survivors.
Get out. No. Was it like made for sci-fi?
I don't know. I just saw it in the list. 30 Days of Night, The Dark Knight. The Long Night or something like that was the sequel.
The Dark Knight. 30 Days Night meets Batman.
I think it is called Dark Knight with an N, not a K.
And it's a movie? Yeah. When did it come out?
I don't know. Dude, I just saw it in my research.
How did I not know this?
I don't know.
I mean, that's something I should know. That's crazy. We're slumming.
I'll see if I can find more researchy on it
a little bit. Dude, yeah, dude. I was going to go with Dracula. I mean, that's kind of like the Bible of vampirism. Since they're more...
It's called Dark Days is the name of it.
Well, that's not a night, but...
30 Days of Night, Dark Days came out in 2010. Came out 3 years after this.
And it was a movie, not another comic book.
It was a movie. Correct.
Who's in it?
Let me IMDb. It is directed by Ben Kitai, written by Steve Niles, Ben Kitai, and Ben Templesmith. So same writers. I don't recognize any. Kali Sanchez, Reyes.
Well, this movie Reese, did do well.
Corio Diora Baird. So yeah, evidently, I'm assuming... without knowing it, I'm assuming it would follow her since she's the survivor. Okay. Stella.
Is she in it?
It would follow her. No, Melissa George is not in it. So they recast.
I meant to say this and I didn't have it in my notes. That's why I didn't. But when I was researching it, it was a hit movie. It made like more than double its investment. So.
Well, I'm sure.
So that would make sense if they made a sequel on the cheap. So.
Keys, I have Salem's Lot. This reminds me a lot of Salem's Lot, especially like the crawling under the houses and being pulled under by something.
That's more like the book. It's not really as much in the movie, but yeah, for sure.
No, I mean the novel, yeah. I think it is. I have the thing, of course, just because, hey, they all wear
parkas. Well, no, the scene where they kill the dogs reminds me of the thing.
Well, they kill the dogs. They also are monsters in the snow. You know, they have to. They have to. The elements are part.
And they're
of
isolated
the
as well. I mean, there's a lot of thing keys in this. The John Carpenter in particular. But I had a few that I had jotted down and emailed myself, and now I can't friggin' find them because I usually do my watch notes on my phone while I'm watching it. But one of the ones I did remember is that it's not. The credit sequence at the end is very similar to Night of the Living Dead, where it's showing the dead bodies and like pictures of them and stuff and stills, and it's kind of like overlapping dissolving. Yeah. Do you remember that? I was like, wow.
Yeah, I do, but I didn't. I even have in my notes. I don't get the ending credits. I don't know what they're trying to say.
I'm not sure either. They're just kind of showing all the people that live there and died, I guess, but. That's what reminded me of Night of the Living Dead, because it's just dead people in the credits, just flashes of them or whatever.
Yeah.
I would put what's the one that we like that the woman directed? Michelle Bigelow. I mean, Catherine Bigelow directed Near Dark, the one where they go from like town to town and seek and destroy themselves. They're like a
coven or a clique of vampires. Pack. Yeah,
so, yeah.
I could see that. I also have mine for that is From Dusk Till Dawn.
You know, I haven't seen that once, and I don't remember it really.
Well, when they finally get there, it's a big, huge clique of vampires who are all feral and just, you know, ripping, tearing, feasting, doing, you know, that sort of
thing. I also, this is a casting key. The guy that played. the big guy, Mark Boone Jr., that played Bo. I read that he was in John Carpenter's Vampires as a vampire hunter.
Oh.
So it's a casting key.
Makes sense. I have Buffy, just because there's kind of a... The makeup design of them is almost Buffy-esque. It's not as much of a brow ridge as Buffy's vampires had, but it is a different look. But they can't turn it on and off at will, which they should be able to do, and that would have made it more cool.
I think the makeup design in this was really cool. I liked how their eyes looked kind of almond-shaped and went up. It was definitely an otherworldly look without being cliche. Yes. I mean, I don't ever recall. I mean, the brow is kind of cliche. We've been seeing that since Fright Night.
Yep.
But the eyes were definitely different, and the teeth were definitely different.
Yep. Having all the shark teeth kind of thing. But my biggest key is that this is an approach to vampires that is a lot more like 28 Days Later was to
zombies.
That was
my other key.
Or Z was to zombies. You know, it's that kind of approach to this massive pack attacks and running and throwing people and dragging them under, you know. It's a much more graphic approach than a single vampire biting you and
I should know when I lose my keys that just go to zombie films because there'll be one there. And 28 Days Later is one of my biggest keys with this movie. And it's because of the freneticness of the attacks and the camera work.
Yeah.
It's like you can't see because things are moving too fast. All you're hearing is lots of snarls and tearing and biting and that kind. And it's very 28 Days Later.
Yes, very much. Yeah.
But I guess since I can't find my damn paper, that's all the keys I have for right now. If I think of another one, I'll add it in post.
I think that's all I have. Oh, no, one last one was the drugstore was kind of reminiscent of The Fog. We have to get there, first of all, so that's kind of scary. And we have to make our little expedition to get there. And then when we get there, all hell breaks loose, and we lose like two people.
The Fog or The Mist?
Sorry, The Mist. Sorry, my fault.
Okay,
Mist.
Because I have a fog key, or it would have been a fog key, and that is, had they shown the vampires go in the jail with the grandmother and the boy, it would have been very similar to that old lady taking care of the boy when the fog rolls up at Adrian Barbeau's house. And they didn't do it. I don't understand why. They showed the blood from where she was slaughtered, but they never showed them arrive there, which I think was a missed opportunity.
Agreed. I mean, they tried to do it with hearing her scream over the radio kind of thing to create the fear, but it wasn't as effective as actually showing her confronting it would have been better.
And I liked that first attack with the guy out at the whatever that thing is.
Power generator.
Because it was very pack attack where you don't see them.
It was Velociraptor attack.
It's exactly what it was. It was Jurassic Park. There's another key right there. That's exactly what it was like.
Yeah, because you didn't know where they were coming from. Same thing with the two. Remember, there were the two guys and the girl, and they had obviously just gotten off the pipeline shift, and she was like flirting with who she was going to go home with and all that. And suddenly one of them is just like
yanked into the dark. Yeah, just and then and then she starts to run, and his body gets thrown out, doesn't it, or something? I can't remember.
Yeah, the other guy goes looking, and he gets
thrown
on him. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about that scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many things I want to like about this movie.
And I think that's what, you know, we found in doing this over the past few years, that there's bad films that are good bad films. There are good bad films, and then there are could-have-beens. And I think this is a could-have-been.
It is,
this
and
is,
so was
this
War
frustrates
of the Worlds.
Me more because such a cool idea that just needed more development, and I don't know, maybe I should go back and read the comics, but everything I saw, you cannot have a leader who speaks to the others and they all live in polite society and use emails and have these kind of feral approach. So it seems like you're changing your entire vampire approach to begin with for this movie. That seems to be an issue. It should have been rewritten. more like the comics if you wanted to do that. But the comic guys are the ones that wrote the screenplay. So maybe they said, oh, we don't want to do that. We want to make them feral.
So, I don't know. Whatever. But no matter how sharp your talons are, they're not going to play an LP on a stereo.
No. Girl, see that scene. I didn't like that scene at all. That whole scene sucked. And this whole kind of, I'm going to bite him. I'm not going to bite him. I'm going to bite him. I'm going to bite him. I'm scaring him up against the wall. I'm not. Okay, whatever.
What they'll believe. Anyway.
Yeah.
But anyway,
That was a good line because that's before he killed Renfield.
It is before he killed Renfield.
Yeah.
Before you sign off, though, I did want to point that out once again that, you know, normally we go out with a big bang of great movies, and we've had two in a row that were could have been that we basically rewrote while we were tearing them apart. This and Spielberg's War of the Worlds last week. So next week is our season finale, and it's going to be a good one, folks.
And it's a good one.
David says it is. I've never seen it. I don't know.
I will be extolling its goodness. Tim might not. I don't know. We'll see what Tim's reaction is. But come back next week to find out. And thank you guys for joining us this week. We really appreciate it. Like Tim said, yeah, we do tend to rewrite the could-have-beens a lot. And this is our next to last episode. But we've enjoyed this entire season. Mm-hmm. It's been a crazy fun ride of good and bad stuff. We'd love to know what you guys think, not only about today's episode. We'd love to know that. Do you like 30 Days of Nights? If you do, why? Help us understand where we are in error or feel the way we do or the way you feel the way you do or anything else this season. If you haven't looked back at our website, we've got all of the rest of the seasons there so you can find other episodes. And we also have a Patreon. You can join and support us and help us keep doing this.
By the way, if you do join Patreon, you will get the entire season, which we've already fixed the season for season 7, mailed to you before or during the very first few broadcasts. So you will know every film every week. If you don't want to support us and still are curious as to how you can find out about movies that we're going to be doing prior, we usually schedule a promo for our Facebook page on Thursdays. That gives you 4 days before the show airs. Mm-hmm. However, if you go to our website and join our mailing list, I also send emails out every Friday saying what the film is going to be on Monday. So those are like 3 different ways you can find out what the movie is actually going to be before we broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
So,
And let us know again, like we said earlier, please subscribe. Please give us a comment. If you can go to iTunes and give us a star, that always helps. That sort of thing helps us. And until next week, Tim, when we'll be in science fiction world. Boy, heavy, heavy science fiction world. It'll be fun. You'll love it.
I'll take your word for it.
There's action in it, and there's death.
Okay.
So you should be all happy right,
that,
about
that'll
those.
Help.
Okay. Talk to all you right, then.
Bye.
Bye.